This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu, and you're listening to Raise Your Game on Enterprise. We've got Shankar Santiram from EQTD Consulting here. This is our Developing a Personal Growth Culture series, and it's mindfulness rather than multitasking. So I'm going to read what he says here. For many years, I was very proud that I was able to multitask. In job interviews, I proudly claimed that that was one of my biggest strengths. Fortunately for me, most HR practitioners were and are possibly still sold on this myth. Hence, I got hired. Now, so yes, he's here the third Monday of the month, and he is going to share how he disregards multitasking as a desirable skill, as it is counterintuitive. Is this something a man would say? Now, instead, he talked about the need to be mindful to develop a personal growth culture. So, welcome back, Shankar.
Good morning. Lovely to be back.
Last month, we discussed coping with change at workplace. You know, very apt topic to have discussed, you know, especially last month.
At that time.
It's been over a month now. Again, of course, recap, what were the key points for coping with change?
I think we talked about this in relation to the new Malaysia that we found ourselves in as soon as the change took place in the governance of the nation. Lots of people in jobs that they otherwise thought were secure for life had to rethink strategies. And we are finding that more and more of that is happening right now.
You've got two types of people before you go. There's the one that's deer caught in headlight people.
That's right.
And then
that's
those
right.
that was like, yes.
Yeah.
Right?
So either way, whether you're a deer caught in front of the headlight or the people who were euphoric and really excited about this new change, all of us have to undergo a certain... The environment is changing. The way people work is changing. And therefore, it's not so much about, you know, embracing change anymore. We talked about the idea that change has arrived. So it's no longer a question of embracing change. A lot of it is to do with being able to cope with the change and manage the change to your benefit. So we talked about three things. Firstly, I said that I think a lot of organizations don't prepare their leadership for managing change. If you think it's business as usual, I think it's not. I think the idea that business as usual, the idea itself is flawed at so many levels, because business is never as usual. Business is always dynamic. Business is always having to take into consideration the environment, having to take into consideration the...
Being innovative.
Absolutely. And being responsive more than anything else to the needs of your clientele. So that's the first thing. The training needs to be done. The second thing is for organizations to understand that there are real emotional problems that people face when there is change. You see, there's one thing to say that change has arrived and now we need to change and we need to train you to change. But I think a deeper understanding of the fact that change is difficult for most people at a very visceral level. Yeah. It's very difficult. We find it extremely hard if we've done our business in a particular way for the last 8, 9, 10 years, or even for the last 2 or 3 years, you get used to a particular way of behaving and then having to change, regardless of whether it is self-propagated or whether it has been enforced upon you, has an emotional problem. So a lot of people tend to trivialize the fact that some people find it very hard to change. So number one, it's that you need to change and you need to train your people. Number two is you need to not trivialize people's inability to change.
Right.
You need to be able to actively work with them and counsel them and talk to them and give them the emotional intelligence. I think that's important. And the last one is the most important element of change, coping with change, is in the organization's ability and in the leadership's ability to constantly communicate with people. To get people involved in the change process itself. And that's something which most organizations don't do well. Leaders tend to make knee-jerk reactions. Leaders have their own range of emotional dramas that they go through in their own head. And sometimes they're just not apt at communicating this to others. And you need to be able to stand up and say, I understand that we need to train you. I understand that this is an emotional and very difficult time. I also want you to understand that it is actually emotional for me as well, and that we're going to work through this. And one of the things that we have learned over the last 1 month is, for example, the Prime Minister, our new old Prime Minister, we love his press conferences. Absolutely fantastic. I mean, you know, he comes out 3 times a week, 4 times a week. On Wednesday, we're looking forward to, I'm sure there'll be something on today. He hasn't been out in the press for the last last week or so because he's in Japan and Hari Raya and so on and so forth. So now he's going to show up. And this is constant communication. It is actually keeping 30 million people abreast with what's going on.
You're right.
Not
it's
only
constant
him.
Communication. Constant communi- yeah.
It's not only him. You have the finance minister is talking, the defense minister is talking, the home minister is talking, multimedia and communications minister is talking. Everyone is out there in the public eye on a regular basis actually answering questions. Because, not, you know, not sidestepping and tai chiing questions or doing wayang kulit, but essentially embracing the hard questions and saying that, and sometimes saying that, hey, I need a bit more time.
Yeah.
And that's really very heartening to hear. That your leaders actually understand that they need to communicate.
Right. Very interesting. Now this week, we'll be delving into lesson 7, which is mindfulness rather than multitasking. Some context around this, please.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you made that comment earlier about the fact that I wrote about this in my weekly column, leading newspaper, about the fact that many of us pride ourselves as multitaskers. We think that that's something which is very important. Walking and talking at the same time, is we consider that multitasking. You know, looking at your phone. I mean, you know, in a technology-driven world, we can do these things. But this is really not multitasking. This is being able to do one mechanical job well because it's rote. It's just something that you do without having to think about. At the same time, for example, you can't look at your phone, walk, and cross the street. You need to, at one point, stop walking, stop looking at your phone, and look left and right. If not, you're going to be plowed in by a bus, for example. So I think the idea that we need to be proud of multitasking or even doing multiple tasks, I think we need to move away from this a little bit because what we need in this world right now is people doing specialist things, people actually knowing a particular idea, knowing a particular job. Someone asked me recently how many businesses or entrepreneurial ventures that I'm involved in. In fact, actually, it was you, Frida. You were introducing me to someone a few days ago when we met outside, and you said, oh, he owns this restaurant, he also owns the comedy club, and he does this, he's got a sandwich place, he's got blah, 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 amongst other things, and he does a radio show with me once a month. And after you'd left that place, the person that you introduced me to said, this is really interesting, the fact that you do so many different things. You know, how do you multitask, she asked me. And I told her, actually, I don't multitask at all. I do multiple things.
You're multi-skilled.
I have multiple ventures that require multiple skills. I'm not necessarily good at any one particular skill, but I do understand that I'm driven by a certain amount of... I have a purpose drive, and that purpose drive acts as the anchor so that I can actually do these things. And all of us do different things. I mean, like, if you come out of the work sphere, we have families. Mm. Some of us have husbands or wives or partners. Some of us have children. Some of us have real strong connections with the community by working in churches and mosques and temples and so on and so forth. Some of us are Rotarian. Some of us do a lot of charitable work. Each of us carries 3 or 4 different tasks. We are children.
We are multifaceted.
Yeah, we're multifaceted. We are children. We are parents. We are husbands, wives, partners, spouses, so on and so forth. And in each of those dimensions, it requires a certain different skill set to manage. The skill set that I have to, and I don't want to sound contrite by saying the skill set that I have to manage my wife is, for example, completely different from the skill set that I need to manage my team in the office and also my folks, also my investors and my partners. All of them require...
And the dogs.
And my animals. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. They are the easiest to manage because, you know, it's no verbalization. It's essentially how I feel and how they feel about me. It's very interesting that we have to do these... We wear these different hats all the time in life and we have to manage different things. So we are doing... We have multiple facets in our life. So similarly, I think we need to understand that when we work, if you want to develop a personal growth culture, you need to not just say that I am able to do 4 different things. Now, I know this from my office. I work with people and millennials especially and people who are of a particular age group who are technology savvy will have a conversation with me while they have their laptop open. Now, I do the same thing. I'm working and I have my screen in front of me and I'm either writing something or replying an email or reading something or working on something and I have a discussion. And I realized that for a long time, everyone would sit with all their devices open and we all talk. And I found that quite often, many things slipped between the cracks because of this. And now we have a rule that I just stop talking when someone is looking away, when they don't actually look at me when I speak to them in the office. Because I close my screen, and the it's like almost a signal. If I pull my screen down, if I pull my laptop and I close it down.
And the shankar stare?
Well, I don't need to stare. It's an action, right? I put it down. Everyone else will also do the same because now they know that we're going to talk. We do sometimes have this because we're looking at things. And did you look at that? Look at this. You know, right. We're reading this. And can you reply the client that? Or they've asked this very difficult question. Look at this statement somebody's made that we need to reply to. How do we deal with this? And instead of me hovering over someone, I have my device in front of me. And he or she has their device across. But the moment we need to have a substantive discussion, I can't do this multitasking. I write a column, as I say, every week. Mm. And it takes me 2 to 3 hours a week to write this column. It's 850 words. You know, I'm on about this week. This Friday will be my 97th column. It's a killer. Mm. You know what I mean? Because you know, I have to create stuff on a weekly basis, and I have a deal. Yeah, you're right. Actually, I'm talking about that this week. I have to tell the people that I work with that I actually have to go into the office and make a declaration that I am going to be writing for the next 3 hours. And they know it's code for like, let's not just barge in or just show up and ask me, ask anything, because I can't concentrate. I have to concentrate. So when you're doing critical tasks, you have to concentrate. I don't think a surgeon is multitasking.
No, you wouldn't want
as so you're so proud of the fact that you're a multitasker. So if you can imagine, you go and see, if I go and see my heart surgeon, Dr. Venugopal, and say that, you know, I need to get the surgery done or whatever. And he says, absolutely no problem, Shankar. He's a good friend of mine. He goes, absolutely no problem, Shankar. I can actually multitask. I can operate on your heart while I have a conversation on the phone with my wife and sing a song at the same time. And you would say that, wow, that's a skill that's amazing.
Can you do it on another patient?
So not on me, please. You know, I always tell people, like, you know, when I say, people take offense, people take umbrage when I say that, you know, the multitasking is not that good a thing. And they go like, what do you mean? You know, isn't that the first thing that people ask? And for a long time, do you remember?
Yeah.
For a long, long time, HR professionals would write in their job descriptions and personal...
A multitasker.
Yes, I need a... There are two buzzwords all the time, right? Interpersonal skills? Which for the longest time baffled me. I didn't understand what interpersonal... until I understood what it actually meant, it always flummoxed me. And I was like, well, what? You know, when I was an 18, 19-year-old, I never understood what interpersonal skills meant. And the other one is, you must be a good multitasker. That's an important. It always comes up at number one. I mean, then they have the baseline things like, you know, honesty, integrity, hard worker, blah blah blah, all of that. But you'll always find these two words intertwined in this, and more and more skilled practitioners who actually research and understand and do some reading and go back and talk to people who are experts who have looked at this, they've stopped using these words. They're no longer interested in interpersonal skills, or they want to know whether you can communicate effectively at different levels. Now, why can't we just say that?
Yeah, communicate.
Can you communicate better? Because are you a good communicator? You know, I can answer that. Yes, I am, or no, I'm not. Or, you know, I'm not sure. I think I need to learn. Can you multitask? No, I have to do one thing. If you ask me to write a column, I can only do that to do it well. I can't write a column and do something else at the same time. Literally, I can't.
Right. Okay. We'll continue our conversation about mindfulness rather than multitasking with Shankar Santhir from EQTD Consulting. After this, you're listening to Enterprise. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. Good morning. This is Frida Liu and Shankar Santhir from EQTD Consulting here for the third Monday of the month in our Developing a Personal Growth Culture series. Today is about mindfulness rather than multitasking. You know, and you were saying earlier about being multifaceted and all that, right? And, And here's the thing as well, like, because I do a couple of other things, and you seem so busy. And I always say I don't think I'm busy. I'm productive. I do different things, right? Because it keeps me happy and active. And but I can only do one thing at a time.
At a time, absolutely.
As I get older, right? You know, and when you say it's counterintuitive and that it's not a desirable skill to have. Give me an example of what you mean.
Well, I could cite some research which I found. The psychologists Matthew Killingworth and Daniel Gilbert of Harvard University. Their research indicates that 46.9% of people in their waking hours actually think about something other than what they are supposed to be doing at that time.
Okay.
This is quite interesting, isn't it? So, you know the old thing about having to clock in and clock out, and people take so much pride, the older generation especially. I was told repeatedly when I was young that if your work starts at 8, you must be there at 7:45. It is really vital that you're there at 7:45. And that was always held up to some great benchmark. I think you need to not be tardy. I don't get me wrong here. No, if you are supposed to start work at 9, I think you should show up at 8:59 at the very latest. I think that's something important. I always barely make it to the studio in time for the show, but I make it. You know what I mean? In the 9 years that I've been doing this with you, 8 years plus, that I don't think I've ever been, never not been here. I have forgotten pre-records sometimes, but not a live show. When I know it's a live show, some alarm bell will go off in my head and I will show up. So I'm not tardy like that. But so much of emphasis is always placed on showing up on time as opposed to what you actually do during the 8 hours that you're there. This was always the be-all and end-all. And I think sometimes we focus quite strongly on the wrong thing. You know, and that's counterintuitive for me is that, you know, often we end up lauding people who can do this, you know, that you can actually do more than one thing. And the research shows that people are mentally off task. And this leads to when people are mentally off task, which means when you're not actually concentrating on what you're doing in that moment, this leads to bad choices, unskillful choices and suboptimal results. This is the reality. When you cannot concentrate on something, so many times in my own work, I have seen people that I have dealt with who I think have understood what I've said, but because they were concentrating on something else while I was giving them those instructions or while we were having a discussion about ideas, it goes beyond. And this happens on a personal level as well. You know, I know individuals that I work with where I need to look at them in the eye, stop them and tell them, I need to be absolutely certain in my mind that they got what I want them to do or what I have got what they want me to do. I have the same problem with clients that I work with. Often clients are grappling with problems. And I think we have this on a daily basis. Your internal stakeholders and external stakeholders, you have, all of us have got that. So internal stakeholders, like your own bosses, for example, sometimes grapple with what they're actually trying to say to you. They have a loose idea in their head what they want. They haven't given it any form and they don't necessarily have the craft to create form to deliver it to you in a neat and tidy package, right? This is what we have to deal with on a daily basis. So you're talking to your boss, he or she is waffling on about something. They have an idea, but they just don't, as they are talking to you, that idea keeps forming in their head. It crystallizes as they are rambling on, right? Now, if you don't concentrate on the rambling at that time, you will be completely lost and you walk out of that meeting going like,
what?
Yeah. It's very empowering. Very empowering. I mean, it was very engaging, you know. Frida was really engaging and empowering. What in God's name did she talk about? I didn't get it. I know it all sounded really officious and proper and it feels like we're going places. How? I don't know. And we find ourselves constantly in those kinds of situations. And if you, can you imagine, if you don't actually have the ability to concentrate on the task at hand, in that moment is to actually understand what you're saying. Even though you don't know what you're saying.
Yeah.
And it's for me to glean, for me to discern what you're saying. You know? So I think that's it. The word multitasking denotes your ability to do more than one thing at a time. Now, okay, practically, to some extent, we all multitask. I'm sure you can walk while talking on the phone, as I mentioned. I think you can fold your laundry while talking to your wife. You know, I can. I can actually fold my laundry or I can iron. I go into a zen-like state when I'm ironing. I'm one of these weird people who enjoys ironing. And, you know, I can just go into a thing. It's repetitive. I find that repetitive tasks like this help me think about things. I cook a lot. I spend a lot of time in kitchens. Personally, as
you
well
cook,
as...
You cook and you iron. Wow.
Yeah, I can do these two things. I'm a good wife. And I can do that, you know. It was a very sexist statement
but
let that
I'll
pass.
I'll let it slide. Okay.
I'm just responding to your, you know, that I can cook and that I can iron. So as I'm cooking, I find myself creating incredible ideas all the time. The decompression that I have while I'm cooking allows me to think about work. And often I will be cooking. But I also find that, here's the thing, right? That only works when I'm cooking something that I know, that I'm proficient at.
Right? A no-brainer.
And literally a no-brainer. So, for example, if I'm making a chicken curry, it's really a no-brainer for me. I have done that thousands of times, literally, and I don't need to actively think about what goes in next, you know? For example, I make a char kway teow, a Penang-style fried kway teow, right? Now, it's also a no-brainer in the sense that it's putting six or seven ingredients together over a period of, you know, a minute and a half or two, and to get a plate of, you know, tasty char kway teow out. But I know that although it is a rote task in terms of preparation, when I fire the wok up, in order for me to, it's a precise point of delivery. You know, so I can't think of anything else.
To get the wok hay
right. To get the wok hay right, to get the right, you know, crispness, to you know, to get the right aroma, to the textures need to work out. So if you, you know, a minute to or 30 seconds too long, your noodles, your flat noodles, your kway teow becomes mush, for example. So the moment I have to, zero concentration. No one can talk to me when I'm frying my. If I'm in my restaurant and I'm doing that, you know, and I do guest appearance in my restaurant where I take over the kitchen for a night and I fry char kway teow for my friend. Not only that, we also sell it in the restaurant. I have to absolutely concentrate. No one can talk to me when I'm doing that. It's really strange that we can do this to some extent. Now, going back to my whole laundry thing, right? I also know I've gotten into so much trouble with my wife, Susanna, regularly that she'll be talking to me while I'm ironing. If it's something which is non-critical, that doesn't require a great deal of thought, it kind of sinks in and I know what I need to do, that I have to go and do something tomorrow, or I have to go and, you know, I have to take this cat to the vet or whatever. That is quite clear. But if it is anything to do with, say, something a bit more substantive, like she shows up and I'm her partner in her practice, and she says, you know, we have to make a decision on whether we're going to spend this 15,000 ringgit on this particular product, or I'm going to buy that, or I have had a difficult time with a customer who doesn't understand that they need to be a partner in the whole healing process. What do you think? How do I approach them? I know I have to stop ironing at the time. I have to take the iron off and I have to concentrate, because I've tried doing this because it's such a mechanical thing for me, ironing. Right. But the moment I need to concentrate on something, I can't multitask anymore.
Right. And that's being mindful, I feel that many people still don't understand completely what it means to be mindful, though.
I think being mindful is quite... it's hard to do, but it's not hard to understand, like a lot of things. You know, when someone says that you must always be positive, it's hard to do, but it's not difficult to understand. You know what that means. Yeah. You figure out that, you know, so easy to say, it cannot be done. You know, so we find excuses, reasons to not project that out. Being mindful, I think, is simply to learn to fully focus on what's happening and to pay attention to what you're doing.
Okay.
That's all it is.
Right.
Right. And this is what annoys me so much with the people I work, people I train, people I do business with, my, you know, contractors that I work with.
Yeah.
This ability to concentrate and focus on something at this point is tough. I'm going to go back to the example of our Prime Minister. I think our Finance Minister, who has had a fraught relationship with our Prime Minister over the last 30 years, made a comment that, you know, he talked about, he was giving an interview to the South China Morning Post, and he talked about, you know, they asked him the political questions. I'm not concerned about that. It was very interesting what he said. He said, this guy's a complete workaholic, he's driving us to the ground. Right? And I have worked with the finance minister of Penang State, to do work there, and I've worked with the chief minister of Penang. He's a workaholic. Right. Now, for a workaholic to look at somebody else and say, this guy is driving me to the ground, you know, driving everybody to the wall.
Someone who's double his age.
Absolutely. Someone who is literally double his age, almost double his age. It's very interesting. The New York Times wrote a piece on Dr. Mahathir as well a few days ago. And they said that he just simply doesn't have time for stuff. A friend of mine who works in this environment and is a director of a public listed company, I met him last night. And he said he met Dr. Mahathir at an open house yesterday, in a private open house function. It's his brother-in-law's place. He had a coffee with him, and he said he just he was there for about an hour, and he's not a talker. He doesn't hang around yammering away. You know, he's very funny. He's very witty in small things. I think he wanted to take a photo with the Prime Minister. He said, "Bagisai Kupang, you know, give me 10 cents for for okay. those of you not from Penang, Kupang, you know, is how we refer to sands, coins. Anyway, you know, one photo is Kupang, you know, 10 cents for a which is quite a witty thing for the Prime Minister to say, for example. And that's it. But he's a man in need of not doing anything else but concentrating on the task at hand.
Right.
And if you ask me what mindfulness is the trick is to be present. It requires you to actively set aside your expectations, put aside your anxiety and speculation about what might happen in the future. And this is one of the most crucial ways to become skilled at what you actually do right now. You need to be actively present. So much of our life at work is problem solving. We have to deal with problems. And we are fraught with anxiety often because we think about, oh my God, if I don't do this right, then that's going to happen, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen. So your computer crashes and you lose all your information, or you think you lose all your information, but you're not skilled at finding out, you know, repairing or pulling out, I don't know what the term is, extracting the hard drive, etc. Jeff Sandhu, your guy, he'll be able to do this. The geek will be able to sort it out, but he's off to Denmark or something or Sweden or something for 2 weeks, right? So he's not around. So immediately, instead of thinking about the next solution, which requires you to be present right now, you warp into this, you know, mindless frenzy of emotionality, and you're upset, and you start thinking about, I've got that interview to do, and I've got that thing to do, I've got this project, oh, half my book is lost, and what am I going to do? And we go into this. This is mindfulness. As a skill that you practice on a daily basis, mindfulness will help you withdraw back these emotional outbursts within yourself, so that you can actually be present right now and start thinking of solutions. Right. You can never think of solutions.
And I know that when I get into a state of frenzy, it's because I haven't been mindful before. And then so when now I get into a state of frenzy, what I do is write it down. What are the things I need to do? And I write it down. It's like, oh, okay. Right?
That's one of the best ways to actually do it. You know, when you take a step back and go like, this is the, you know, that whole, so what next? You know, so what'll happen next? I think one of the things that if we can practice mindfulness, you can practice mindfulness by always going, so what is the consequence of this? Okay, and then what's the consequence of that? And you'll find that by the time you reach three or four whys that you ask yourself, they ask you to do five whys. Some experts say, ask yourself why five times and you'll be able to kind of get to the root of most issues and problems in a problem-solving technique. But by the time you hit your second or third why,
actually,
you know already, it's fine. I think I know where to go. And that gives you a sense of buoyancy. The idea is constantly to give yourself a sense of buoyancy. If you can buoy yourself up all the way. I mean, look, the country, really, Malaysia, same. Okay, we are the same. You go today to KLIA, there'll still be people who don't know how to queue. All right, you go to public toilets, it's still slightly messed up. Right, and people drive like ding dongs still on the street. But there is a sense of buoyancy.
Okay,
right, that we think that this is the new Malaysia. It's changed in one facet. The governance of this nation has changed because we've got a new leadership. Right, but that doesn't mean people have changed.
Right,
immediately, and that's the real deal. The real deal is that we need to change as individuals. We need to change as a nation. But what are we thriving on at the moment? We're thriving on that sense of buoyancy. You feel proud of it. I have a friend of mine who got his PR in Australia, went to Australia, came back 2 weeks later after the election and said, I want to come home now. He was there for 2 weeks, in Melbourne for 2 weeks. And he said, I'm really confused at the moment. And he came and talked to me about whether he should continue leaving or coming back to Malaysia. And I said, well, to know, you have to go back to your purpose drive. You know, why did you leave in the first place? You know, because for me, it beggars belief that you left in the first place because you're quite skillful and you don't work for the government. So I don't particularly understand why you needed to leave to start off with. And so you have this nebulous idea of leaving without having any idea. So that's the other thing about mindfulness, that you need to be purpose driven to actually actively be mindful. You can't be mindful when you are purposeless, when you don't have a vision.
Right. Would that be the takeaway message for the day?
The takeaway message would be exactly that. You must be, your mindfulness comes with a sense of purpose. Mm. So if I lose my computer or if everything crashes or I don't know what the terminology, if it gets corrupted or whatever, my purpose drive will keep me grounded and not get flighty. Mm. Because creating a ruckus and getting into a frenzied state of mind doesn't help you or anyone around you.
All right. Shaka Santiram from EQTD Consulting in our Developing a Personal Growth Culture series, Mindfulness Rather Than Multitasking. Of course, he'll be back on the third Monday of next month. This is Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.